Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
Last week, we began a preschool year series of episodes exploring the unprecedented right-wing assault on Oklahoma public education. Observer columnist and former Senate President Pro Tem Cal Hobson took us on a half-century-plus deep dive into the dark money-funded campaign whose goal is to end public education as we've known it, replacing Oklahoma's public K-12 schools with religious and/or for-profit schools. This week, Tulsa State Representative and Assistant House Democratic Leader Melissa Provenzano joins us for a wide-ranging conversation that explores what this treachery hath wrought. A besieged public school system facing an already acute teacher shortage, with more and more classrooms covered each year by emergency certified instructors and administrators turned babysitters. A state superintendent willfully undermining federal and state funding, threatening individual teachers' certifications, and working around the clock to destroy the separation of church and state by turning public schools into evangelical indoctrination centers. Under Ryan Walters' leadership, and let's use air quotes around leadership, the State Department of Education is in chaos. Experienced workers are fleeing in droves, in some cases forced out because they won't kowtow to the would-be education emperor. The agency is all but ignoring the state's open records law. Some reporters waiting more than 100 days for public information that taxpayers deserve to know. Increasingly angry Republican legislators are privately strategizing Walters' possible impeachment. And Attorney General Gentner Drummond is vowing to get to the bottom of millions of misspent federal COVID relief dollars and other alleged fiscal malfeasance during Walters' tenures first as Governor Stitt's education secretary and now as elected state superintendent. Our conversation with Representative Provenzano, herself a former classroom teacher and principal, occurred July 13th as part of the Observer's Newsmaker series at Full Circle Books in Oklahoma City. We were talking earlier that it's hard to know where to begin when we're talking about what's going on with public education here in Oklahoma and with the superintendent that we have, who just continues to gaslight almost by the hour on social media. So I guess I would like to start out by asking you how you prioritize this process right now. What we really should be paying attention to, and maybe what we're missing by paying attention to the crazy stuff that he's saying, including today saying that Joe Biden is following Satan's agenda. That's his latest today.
I'm not quite sure where to begin, but can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you, honey. That's my husband in the back, Representative Fugate, Representative Bennett, who I am office mates with. I have Tulsa constituents in the front, Laura and Peter, and I'm thankful that you came all the way over here. When you just got the law. Yes.
They are regulars. Yes. Yeah, they're regulars.
But we actually met with Auditor Byrd. I won't go into the details yesterday. Because she continues to work, but the thing that I would say to you is there is a culture war that is masking the eyes and that is masking what is really going on here in Oklahoma. This gentleman is spewing almost daily something new that it's a shock jock type of environment. And what I want to say to you is, you know, we have to continue to call out all the awful things that he says. We have to protect our kids. We have to protect our teachers. We have to protect our school districts because they are really feeling the pain of these attacks. But bigger than that, behind the curtain, eyes on the prize, it's all about money. And if we are going to do something about what is happening in the state of Oklahoma, we've got to start really paying attention to the money. We still have to call out how necessary it is to protect all students. We still have to defend our teachers and stand up for them, but we have to pay attention to what is really going on. And we got our first look at what is really going on. I mean, this gentleman has been in office for 7 months, not even a full year. And I think everyone is sort of reeling, and that is a nonpartisan opinion. It is across the board, and people behind the scenes are wondering what we can do. And so it's important to remember that our Republican counterparts are independent, are libertarian. They are wanting to know what's going on. And you asked me earlier, and we'll talk about gear funds in just a moment, but you asked me earlier, is this just because we're paying attention? Does it seem like it's so on fire because we're living and breathing it? But my husband was at the doctor's office today, and his doctor, who is not particularly political, asked about Ryan Walters. So the message is growing, and we need to continue to talk about things. But let's talk about the money. Let's start with the gear report that was put out about 2 weeks ago now. Just to kind of catch everyone up, and I don't want to take up too much time, but long and the short of it, go read it. Per Representative Fugate, start on page 43. That's where it really gets good. I brought it. It's about that thick. But the state, through the governor, was given $39 million to spend on education. $9 million of that was given to the State Department of Education under Joy Hofmeister. The federal government investigated how those dollars were spent under Superintendent Hofmeister, got the check mark of approval, no problems. The other $30 million, not so much. And those funneled into two buckets. So GEAR stands for what? Governor's Emergency Something Fund. So the $30 million, it's right in the name, the G stands for governor. So let's not forget that, as irritated as we get with one gentleman, that there are more people at play here. So there were two buckets largely that I got funneled into, that $30 million. The first, you've heard about the Bridge the Gap funds. Everyone's heard about ClassWallet and how this company was given blanket approval to let parents in Oklahoma purchase what they needed to for educational purposes, and that included Christmas trees, TVs, and kitchen appliances, and we all know about that. And then we just heard Attorney General Drummond say ClassWallet is absolved. In 19 other states, they dealt with these gear funds with no issue. And the federal government said, you did everything you were supposed to do. It's on our end where the fault was. The folks that gave blanket approval to this this organization to let parents purchase what they needed to purchase.
All supervised by the then education secretary, who's now the superintendent.
That's correct, Secretary Walters at the time. So that's one bucket. The other bucket is the stay in school funds. And that program was for private school tuition to the tune of, please correct me if I get it, a piece is wrong, but $6,500 per kid for 1,500 kids to continue to go to private school, but they had to demonstrate financial need. And the federal government said, okay, but 1,100 of those kids, roughly, did not demonstrate financial need. The other 400 did. And left about, I want to say 600-ish, that did have financial need that couldn't get access to those funds. And five private schools in the state were given access to those dollars and no others. And that's where the auditor found issue with the way those dollars were spent. So where are we now? So that report came out. Probably everybody stayed up late reading it, right? But that's the long and the short of it. So Drummond is now saying, thank you for that. I want you to go further, because the question that was posed to Auditor Byrd was, did we expend these funds as directed by the federal government? The answer is no, by and large. So now Attorney General Drummond has asked for an investigative audit, which is much more serious. Auditor Byrd will now do that investigative audit, looking for, were the violations intentional, and did they rise to the level of criminal activity? She will turn her report over to directly Attorney General Drummond. And if there were crimes committed, he'll prosecute. That's where we're at with CARE funds. Second? But that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, and we're going to continue to follow the money here for a second.
Right.
We also have no idea what the State Department under the Walters administration has done with federal grants that are so vital to Oklahoma's public schools, right?
That's correct. That's actually where, thank you for leading me there. So there are federal grants. There are two types of federal grants. There are competitive federal grants that we have to go after, that we don't automatically get. But then there are formulaic grants that we should get every single year. Title I dollars, if anybody's in education, you know exactly what that means, but a student fills out a free and reduced lunch form at school. If they qualify, then the school and the state get money for that student, which filters down to the school. The other formulaic grant is IDEA funds for our special education students. Those two are formula grants. We haven't really thought too much about those because those are supposed to be automatic. The competitive grants, we have grant writers that have now vacated the building at the State Department of Education that go after up to $30 million in grants every year. To date, the last time I checked, which was in May, we only had applied for three. And generally we apply for about 54, 56. So a lot of schools are very concerned because those buy teachers. Those by counselors and support staff and supplies. And it is July 12th, 13th? 13th. And most schools have heard if they're getting those dollars by now. We also want to know if the existing competitive grants that we applied for under the Hoffmeister administration, which we were awarded, have been used appropriately, or if they're being used for other purposes. So we're going to continue to dig into that. But then just this week, we started hearing from school districts about the formula grants. We haven't gotten our money yet. And they were notified that they would get it by July 10th, which was Monday. Usually by April, school districts have a letter in hand saying how much you're going to get. That has not happened either. Title I dollars by a lot of teachers. And a lot of supplies. It's millions and millions and millions of dollars. So we're going to continue to press on those, but we're going to have to circumvent the State Department of Education and go directly to the United States Department of Education to get a comprehensive list of where we're at. So I think that's what we're in the process of doing now.
So not only are schools in jeopardy of being shortchanged here, but the taxpayers are on the hook two for how many millions did this auditor, why do I have 300 million stuck in my mind? That may be way too much. I'm not very good, Beth can tell you, I'm not very good with numbers. But
300 million is the amount of the voucher program that we just pushed through, so maybe that's where that's coming from. The initial report focused on the gear funds, which was $30 million, but it's much bigger than that. It will be much bigger than that.
But the taxpayers of Oklahoma could end up paying that back, and any money that the state doesn't receive that we normally would get in federal funding for schools is going to have to be made up somewhere. And it appears to me, reading in spite of what you may see in the headlines in the Oklahoma today, it appears to me that the revenue stream, the state revenue stream, is slowing considerably. I think there's a trend there. And, you know, we may be sitting on a whole big pot of money in the rainy day fund and other savings accounts, but it appears to me that could disappear in a New York minute if all of a sudden we have to make up a bunch of this money to try and keep our schools afloat.
I think you nailed it there. Back in April and May, I asked a person handling the budget for education, what's going to happen if we have to pay all this back? And the person said, luckily we have a lot of money in savings, but that savings that that we shouldn't be spending on those. There are so many things, especially as Democrats, that we know that we can look and go, we could be spending it on increasing access to sooner care for the 75,000 kids that fall below the federal poverty line. You know, we could, that still don't have access. We could be doing so much with this money that we're just sitting on in these bank accounts. And we have the rainy day fund, and what's the other fund that we have that is just overflowing with cash that we need to be investing in the state of Oklahoma? These are your dollars. The federal dollars are your dollars that need to be coming back and becoming invested in Oklahoma. We have so many things. We could fully fund the Ethics Commission. How about that?
I'm just curious, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but I guess KFOR here in Oklahoma City is having a report this evening that students in, or the families in Marlow have been notified that their students who had outstanding lunchroom debt were not going to be allowed to re-enroll. And I know that apparently the superintendent said, well, it was designed to sort of be an encourager to those folks to, you know, to pay up. But it makes me wonder if that's not a canary in the coal mine sort of thing.
Wait a minute, enroll in school?
Yeah,
that's illegal. That's unconstitutional.
So apparently are the superintendent's processes for hiring, which we could discuss in a minute perhaps too.
So, you know, one of the things that Democrats actually proposed, Representative Waldron had a bill that has actually become law in many different states where lunch and breakfast at school is free for everyone. That would cost $25 million. We can afford that in a heartbeat. And so, you know, but every school district that I've ever worked in kept an overflow account. And I mean, everybody got a peanut butter sandwich if you weren't going to eat. But that the lack of enrollment, that's a constitutional right. I'm sorry, I'm processing what you've just said.
Okay.
No, that's we will not be doing that. Neither will Marlow, I would imagine, on short order.
So, are we viewing a sort of death by a bazillion cuts here with the Stitt Walters regime? Clearly these are opponents of public education. They've gotten levers of power now, and they can wreak so much havoc to the system that it makes you wonder how the system can sort of survive this. But two, if you consider a decade's worth of the nation's worst, deepest budget cuts in education, public ed, we've still not begun to recover the billions, basically, that were lost during that time. You add it to this, 5 years now of Kevin Stitt, 7 months, seems like 7 years of Ryan Walters, and I'm afraid we're losing a whole generation, potentially, of students.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, and you'll hear our counterparts on the other side of the aisle pretty much every year that I've been in office. Historic funding in education, but if we account for inflation, we're still behind where we were in 2011. You know, and it's so interesting to think about when we think about the budget. I mean, Tulsa Public Schools got an additional $27 million. That's hefty. But they also got an increase of over the last 5 years to their school property insurance has tripled. And so these things cost money, and they are not alone. I'm sitting here processing, you know, it's historic, except for when it isn't. You know, Tulsa Public Schools is looking at cuts, you know, to different programs to be able to pay for the teacher's salary. I'm like, wait, you guys got $27 million? Well, it's amazing. We're going to take it, and it's wonderful. And they should, but costs have increased across the board, and if we're not accounting for inflation and if we're not accounting for the cuts that have been made, we're still running to stand still, as it were. And so, you know, the more we cut and the more, I mean, $300 million just in this next year alone being fuddled into the voucher programs, the voucher schemes, you know, is that much money off the top that goes into all programs, not to mention education, which is the largest pot of money that goes funneled out to our schools. And, you know, I hear, you know, $6,500 a kid, that the amount ranges, you know, how much we're going to feed into the voucher program. But these are going to schools that pick their students. And these are going to schools that can expel Public schools cannot, no matter what anyone says.
And over which our oversight is limited, right?
Correct. But hopefully we'll begin to build in some framework. If they're getting the money, they also get the accountability. So I believe that's coming.
There are just so many roads to go down here. I'm trying to figure out. Obviously, this feeds into a continuing to worsen teacher shortage in this state. The legislature has made a big production in recent years of pouring money into teacher training programs. Like, oh, we're really helping out this next generation of teachers that are coming up. But I'm telling you, when I was driving to Brews and Views in Norman the other night down I-35, there's a big billboard. Have you seen it, Andy? Dallas Independent School District, starting salaries depending on, you know, where you are career-wise, between 60-something thousand and 102,000 a year. And I thought, you know, I know the cost of living is more there, but it's got to be appealing. So we're dealing with that on top of all this. What's the mood, do you suspect, in the schoolhouses across Oklahoma?
I think it's real easy to gauge the mood by the number of openings that we have. In my area, in Tulsa, we usually have 200-plus openings, and that's fairly normal, but we're at 400. And then, you know, add in support staff, which haven't had a raise, but could go to Amazon or to Walmart and make much more than what they make in the schools. You've got to choose to work in schools because you love kids. You know, but it's also like choosing to become a police officer, never really making that much, or choosing to become a nurse or any sort of public service. People believe, well, you should just do it because it's the right thing to do and you're not in it for the money. Well, money would be nice to have, especially when every state around us, every time we kick in a raise, they go, oh, Oklahoma's kicking in a raise, we're going to kick in a raise too. Same with Arkansas, same with Missouri, same with New Mexico. You know, I told the story when I was first running, and it's still true to this day, that New Mexico is sitting at the University of Oklahoma at semester saying, we'll offer you $55,000 a year, we will pay off your student loans, and we will pay to move you to New Mexico. And as a young teacher, I would have been like, I'm gone. And so it goes beyond respect, but respect is huge. And respect translates into the way we talk about teachers and the way we fund teachers as well as the school. The teacher walkout was about salary, but it was about so much more than that. It was about what it is that we need to facilitate excellence in supporting the teacher in the classroom, and we're still learning to catch up to that now.
So how can we be sure that all the classes are going to be covered this fall?
So as a former principal, you get real creative, and principals covered a lot of classes. Principals taught classes. In Tulsa, we have lots and lots of emergency certified teachers, but you also had lots of staff absences every day where you're combining classes. That's where the rubber meets the road and the practicality of, we first have to make sure our students are safe and supervised, baseline. And then we begin to educate. And that is no place to begin, especially when you're short-staffed. And so we have to do what we can and piecemeal what we can to make our teachers feel supported. In the Tulsa area, overwhelmingly, our teachers were like, the professional development is crushing. And I'm not just speaking of Tulsa Public Schools, I'm speaking regionally. And so we actually ran a bill that says, okay, we're going to cap how much professional development you have to do, 150 hours for every 5 years. It's about 30 hours a year, and a lot of schools do that. A lot of schools do a lot more. But if you're a teacher in this room, you know the professional development that you've sat and clicked through because you just got to get it done versus truly enriching content that helps you be a better teacher. So hopefully we'll allow more time in the classroom, and you just kind of have to take a bite at the elephant a little bit at a time that way.
Well, you know, I'm sure that a number of the folks who are emergency certified are good-hearted folks. They're there for the right reasons, and probably some of them are pretty good teachers, actually, for having not been professionally trained, would be my guess. But overall, and particularly when you consider what we went through with loss of learning through COVID, the worst of COVID, you know, I can't help but think that this helps fuel sort of the that evil destruction of public education, because you're putting more and more rookies, in effect, on students who are already a little behind the curve anyway, in many cases, and expecting them to perform. And then when they don't, you know, you throw up your hands and say, see, the government schools, as they call them, are failing our kids.
Well, and you can measure that by how long emergency certified teachers stay. Some, it is their gift and what they were meant to do, and they are still teaching to the today. But the average length of time an emergency certified teacher stays is straight a little bit right at around 2 years. In 2 years, if you're an educator, you're still getting your feet wet. And by 3 years, you're not creating new lesson plans all the time. And by 4 years, you've got your classroom discipline on lock, and you're able to assess individual kids and provide personalized learning. And really, by 5 years, you've found your groove. But we're checking out at 2 years. So what do we do to get them to stay? And that the answer to that is those wraparound supports that we need all this funding for. The answer to that is, you know, relevant curriculum. The answer to that is relevant and timely training rather than just, you know, click and get and support, and then positive discipline intervention strategies for these kids who were home for a year, you know, doing virtual learning. You know, they just for clarification, although I know our superintendent likes to say it, most public schools never cancel school. Our students were in virtual learning the whole time. So next time you hear them say that, not true.
Oh, which leads me naturally to another question that I had. There's just so much going through my brain right now, but trying to figure out how to keep this conversation moving along, because there's so many things we can discuss. But do you get the impression that the anti-public ed forces have been all too happy to sort of divide and conquer by holding out Oklahoma City and Tulsa, the two urban districts, as examples of why it's, in Governor Stitt's mind, is dragging the whole system down, you know? And then you have a speaker who flip-flopped on vouchers because, you know, he managed to get a boatload of money for rural schools in Oklahoma, which seems to be, you know, I don't think ultimately it's going to help them in the long run if the whole system runs aground. But is that going on? Are they making example? And is a lot of that, is race at the core of that?
There's so many moving parts.
She has never been speechless in my experience until now.
There are so many moving parts. You have classism for sure. You know, when you have the resegregation of society happening from the public schools to the charter schools to the private schools, who gets in and who doesn't is interesting. You know, how many special education students do you find in your private schools? Not many, because they don't have the resources. Well, in public school, you acquire those resources because it's the law. And private schools can, you know, and just for clarification, I have a lot of constituents that are private school parents, but they get it in Tulsa. But private school is large and voluminous in Tulsa, but it's growing, and it's growing here. Now the Tulsa versus the Oklahoma City thing that he said in Paris, well, if we just took that, that's false. He just made that up on the spot, you know. But if he wants to take out Tulsa and Oklahoma City, as Representative Monroe Nichols says, well, let's take out our economic impact as well, and then see if you like that, because we are the two major economic drivers in the state. So, but circling back to your question, is it about race? I think a lot of people would make that argument because the data doesn't lie, and the resegregation is a deep concern for many, and equal access to the best education is the law. And so, but I think you also, with the virtual charter ruling that Attorney General Drummond is so concerned about, there's more segregation happening that direction as well.
Well, thank goodness for the, I call them the firewall you know, the Attorney General and the state auditor are sort of a firewall to a lot of this nonsense that's going on. Well, we're halfway through the hour, and I like to throw it open to questions for the fun. We could talk about, oh my God, you know, I'm sitting here like, they're not filling open records requests. There's, you know, I mean, the whole departments apparently have evaporated over there, and there's so much we can talk about. Let me throw it open to folks, and let's try to speed the conversation along here.
Have we solved the problem of competition with for-profit schools?
So have we solved the problem of competition for for-profit schools, meaning universities or
no,
for privates?
No, secondary schools.
Oh, I would say no. I would say no. We're funding them with our public tax dollars and taking money out of our public schools to fund them.
Read the book written by my cousin. His last name is Baines. He used to be a teacher here. You can look him up online. Get his book.
Okay. What's the title of the book? I'll look it up.
I don't remember.
Fair
I'm
enough.
I'm an economist. You know.
Who else has got a question?
Not
here?
Oh.
Hang on, come over here to.
Maybe any question, I'll tag in.
Well,
my
question would be, what's their end game? I mean, I don't try to feed my paranoia side, but it almost sounds like if we can dumb down the Oklahoma population as a whole, then we can do whatever we want, and they'll just be too stupid to understand it, because they'll do what we tell them to do, because, you know, Who taught them, you know, logic and reason? Oh, it's a mom and dad at the dinner table because, you know, they know what their kids need. So what's the end result? What's the end game of attacking education?
I think I hear you suggesting that perhaps we're creating a population of worker bees and a population of bosses. And I would have to agree with you. I mean, they've told you what the end game is. You heard it from Superintendent Walters last week at the Moms for Liberty thing in Pennsylvania, destroy the United States Department of Education and the State Department of Education subsequently, and create a private system.
And
what?
And
suck all of the money out. Yes.
Well, I'm curious, kind of stimulates my question. I think Walters is a true believer. He really believes all that nonsense. But how many of them up at the Capitol, how many of the representatives that you deal with would you estimate are possible converts who might be willing to support good legislation if you didn't frame it as a partisan issue?
I think the number is growing. For sure, you have lots of good moderate Republicans that don't get their bills heard because they don't vote a certain way, but they're hearing from their constituents too, and saying you need to stand up because we've gone beyond the crazy train and we're on the crazy starship going to crazy planets
and
somewhere else.
Close to getting to the 50% mark at least.
It depends on who you ask, I would say. Some days I hear we're six people away. Other days, not so much.
Which is part of the discussion, too, is impeachment these days. And do you get a sense whether that train is going to await the investigations?
Yeah.
Whoa. What should she say? I don't know. Are we going into dangerous territory here, Andy?
I think with regard to impeachment, we're going to have to follow the money, and we're going to have to continue to be very public about that narrative, because the culture war stuff, as much as it is close to my heart, and much as I want to defend kids and teachers and parents, you've got to focus on the money and keep beating the drum of where is the money, where did it go, and it will be impossible to ignore. Very similar to the Epic investigation. Before I took office, I was complaining about Epic and saying, you know, they took 100 of my kids, and then at semester they were back.
Yeah.
And I lost that money, and I had to wait for it. But we have to keep talking about the money, and we'll get there. I don't know how fast we'll get there. Epic took years and years and years, but that doesn't mean we're absolved.
Hang on just a second. Kettle, I'm coming right back.
Sorry, Ms. Pro Tem, didn't mean to take the mic from you. I wanted to respond on the impeachment and remind everybody that it would take a special session to do impeachment unless we wait until next February. I don't expect the governor is going to call a special session to impeach his buddy. So it takes two-thirds of both chambers to do that. And it also, most importantly, will take the will of senior leadership. So the speaker and the pro tem will both have to agree. Otherwise, their members won't get in line for this. And we can call for it as often as we want. And so we've got to find that compelling issue that causes both of those leaders to find political will to do this.
Well, and not only that, but if it's achieved, who appoints the replacement? The
governor does.
Thank you, Representative. You always say things so much more eloquently than I do. I'm just follow the money.
And I don't want to make
when it becomes impossible to ignore the money, that's when you'll see action.
And I don't want to make everybody else, I don't want to make everybody feel as bad as I do, obviously, about all this is driving me crazy, but I could see another round of Janet Parisi if that came about with the appointment.
She's actually there. Just putting it out there. She's in that building right now, pulling the strings.
Andy called it exactly right on the impeachment. Don't go down that road unless you got the votes, because when you fail, you only strengthen the fool that you're trying to execute. So, you know, don't do that. And follow the money, as you said. Very good point was made on the front row. How many more of the R's are going to just continue to sit there like deaf mutes? And there's a piece of evidence from the last session that's helpful in answering your question. On the proposal, they called it a tax credit bill. It was the charter school scheme. 11 Republicans broke and didn't vote for it. Now, that may sound like a small number, but it takes a lot of courage to sit there and vote against the speaker's bill. The speaker's name was on the bill. And so 11 out of the 81 broke. You all have 20. You begin to get towards 33. That's the key number. I'll leave it at that. But it's not as desperate as it may sound. The second thing is, please read Chris Castile, who's a brilliant reporter for the Oklahoman, and read the article called The Bottom Line. You all resisted giving away the enormous amounts of money to companies who were not going to come here anyway. And a most recent report from CNBC has proven that our governor is just a complete fool as he talks about being such an attractive state. We've actually gotten worse as a place to do business over the last 3 years, notwithstanding all the nonsense he says. So your thoughts about the wisdom of what you all have done in trying to avoid giving money to people in Japan who are not coming here anyway?
I feel like you said it all, sir. I can't really add anything to that. And we did. And it's even interesting to hear the state chamber just say, you know, we're good on tax cuts. We're good. And now we need to focus on workforce, which is education. And that's how we're going to get people to come to the state and how they're going to stay.
Okay. I don't live in Oklahoma. I live outside of Philadelphia, but I will always be from Oklahoma.
All right.
And I want to emphasize how bad Ryan Walser is.
I don't think you have to tell us.
Well, from a different perspective, because Philadelphia is very parochial. They only know what goes on there. Oklahoma, they know the song. They know me because I'm exotic. They know it's nothing but desert here. And now they know Ryan Walters. He makes the news frequently, which is really bad.
Oh, my goodness.
Talking to Trumpers here, I've heard a lot of them say, we can't stand him either. The reason he got elected is because you have the straight ballot. Now, Democratic states that have supermajorities like that, too. It's a two-sided thing, but... that's something, I don't know if you guys are considering it, if it's ever going to go anywhere. And the other thing, since I've got the mic here, on companies that are not locating here. I talk to CEOs of companies, and yes, they're aware of taxation. They seem to universally be more interested in the education of the workforce. And they don't just mean the skills, they mention critical thinking. And we're losing it.
I believe, yes, to answer your first question about straight party voting, now we're going to own this as Democrats. We're the ones that brought straight party voting to Oklahoma, but we need to be the ones to get rid of it. Representative Hugate, would you like to talk about the bills that you've run to? Front and center.
Yeah, well, I will tell you that I don't believe that anytime soon we're going to get rid of straight party unless the people decide to take it into their own hands through the initiative petition. I have a very strong interest in election-related bills. I've run bills that would put unopposed incumbents like myself onto the ballot in November so that you could vote up or down to decide whether or not to keep me. Because right now, only one person in my district decided who represents us, and that's not good democracy. I have proposed changes to how we handle primaries in Oklahoma, most recently saying if you want to keep a closed primary like the Republicans, that's a party process, not a people process, and so you should pay for it, and you should not be allowed to have your primary on the same day that any state election is held. Those aren't very popular ideas at the Capitol right now, but I will keep asking for those.
You know, in Oklahoma, but our mayor and Oklahoma City's mayor called for open primaries. Now, I didn't get into the nuts and the bolts of what they meant by open primaries, but you have two Republican mayors of major metropolitan areas saying it's time to swing back to the middle because we're going way too far to the right.
Melissa, you and I are good friends, and I retired in 2016 from Hale High School, and I know just from talking to people that are still there, it's gotten worse, much worse, so that's, you need to deal with that too.
By worse, do you mean discipline issues?
Doing what they're supposed to be doing because of the teacher shortage.
I agree. When you put a Band-Aid on things and then you put a Band-Aid on top of that, and when you put a Band-Aid on top of that, you start to have problems. And then you add COVID. So, I agree. But it can't all be about the A to F score. It has to be about kids. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of these priorities, and so I hadn't thought about education policy, figuring that was going to not, we're not going to get back on track on education policy for quite a few years. But the Washington Post had a really interesting article this week saying corporate school reform is dying, and now, and he finishes up, blessedly, with the collapse of corporate school reform, we can have holistic education, things like that. I thought, well, it's not dying here. I mean, we've still got a lot of corporate people putting a lot of fake news about the progress that they said that occurred in the decade before COVID, even though scores have been going down. And also, back then, it was neoliberals wanting to blow up the schools and then have venture philanthropy rebuild them. But now we got a lot of people who just want to blow up the schools. So I agree with him that there's an opportunity now to start moving back towards discussing holistic education policy where we treat kids as human beings and not as test scores. I don't know that we really have the time to prioritize that right now, but unless it's a winning issue. And I would think that that might be something we could draw Republicans in, that it has to be a team effort for students, not just for test scores.
Okay. You know, I agree with you. And when you talk about corporate reform, it's the opportunity to make a dollar, to be quite frank, off the public school tax money. When I was a principal, the formula could not be more simple, but we kept trying something new, and then trying something new, and then trying something new, and paying this consultant all this money to try something new. And so for 3 years, I said, leave me alone. Let me do what I'm going to do. And you start with getting kids there. You feed them. You give them attention incentive. You let that sit. When they show up, they start to learn. It's not hard. Teachers know what they're doing. They do. We have nationally ranked teacher preparation programs here in this state. Our teachers are going. But the teachers who stay know what they're doing because they're getting hired away quickly. Other states know what we've got. But when you give a program or a plan some time to work, and the legislature is famously guilty for not doing that. Well, that didn't work this year. Now we're going to try XYZ program and this program and this program, and a teacher's just mastered Read 180 or Scholastic or Great Expectations or this or that, but out with the old and in with the new, and we're paying a new consultant. So we need time. You know, and I had a fellow representative say, well, we think in short term because we're term limited, but really, that really resonated with me. Because we want to fix it all now, or we're elected next year, or we're running for re-election next year, and we need to be able to say we made progress. But what kids need and what teachers need is for you to say, we're going to do this, and then stick with it for a while. It takes 5 years. First you get them there. You support the teachers. What is it you need? I'm going to get that for you. Because if you're on the hook, because I'm supporting you, you're invested. You know, when I first became a principal, half my staff was gone every Friday. You know, and I finally said, here's the data. What is it going to take for you to invest yourself? And we started working on it. And teacher attendance improved. And then student attendance improved. And then we got social services, support, and mental health in the school. That was critical. I brought in the social service. And if you qualified for student care, you could go, first hour, I'm having a hard day. My dad got arrested in the middle of the night, or we had to move overnight because we're at 60 days on their lease and we've got to just disappear to the next place. And a kid didn't feel like conjugating a verb because they've been through all this trauma. If you can pull them out first hour for an hour and figure out what's going on, get them back into class, they're ready to do math second hour. And then that support therapist is going, okay, now I'm reaching out to all these outside agencies to provide the supports I know this kid now needs. And you see your attendance go up. The kids know they'll get a meal, they'll get the support that they need, and the teachers care. It's not hard. It's a simple formula. We just keep messing with it at the legislature.
Well, thank you for being here. I was on the election board in Cleveland County for 8.5 years.
Bless you.
It was a wonderful job. I worked for 3 different secretaries, and all of them were concerned about the lack of people voting in municipal elections. We used to get fewer than 17% of the people voting. Almost all these secretaries say that we need to improve the number of people voting. Jim Williams, who was there for a short period of time, went up to Washington State, and they have universal mail-in ballots. And they have like 90% participation in voting. And I can't help but believe that if we had more people voting, that we would have different legislators elected.
Yes.
Because right now it takes a very small number of people. You can get one church to go to the polls and elect someone. And that's not right.
You know, in my district in Tulsa, right around election time, signs pop up. And it's happened 2 cycles now. Don't think, vote straight party. I've got one in my garage. I'm like, what? No. We need you to think. But we really pushed during COVID the absentee ballot initiative, and more people participated than ever before. But then we came right back to the legislature, and we started passing laws about absentee voting to make it harder. And so that's kind of where we are. But now our peers across the aisle are finding out, oh, wait, we have a lot of Republicans voting absentee, so maybe we want to dial back on that. But the biggest development, meaning online voter registration this week, huge, huge. And that's been since 2015.
Yeah, it took almost 8 years to
get it done, yeah. So that's going to be a huge win. It's going to be a lot more inexpensive to get people registered, step one. But then getting them to the polls has got to be step two. So,
speaking of the 2024 elections, we all know that you're not going to pick up 20 or 30 seats, so you pick them up one here, one there. Two quick things. I'm really lucky tonight. I'm sitting next to the next representative from House District 100. She's going to beat an incumbent Republican. I don't know if I can do this or not, but I think her name is Cindy Parrish. I hope some people might be interested in meeting her.
Yes.
That's a seat. And then I want your opinion about the open seat in Lawton with the retiring of the incumbent senator down there. Do we have candidates, and is that winnable?
So I've heard a lot about you, Cindy. So I look forward to meeting and visiting with you. I know you have a primary, if I'm not mistaken, and so I'll probably play pretty neutral until after the primary, but good luck. The Lawton seat should be winnable. All the seats on the House of Representatives side should be Democrat seats. We need the right candidate to knock the heck out of some doors and raise money. That's what running for office means. Knocking doors, raising money. Knocking doors, raising money.
Who's our nominee then?
Not sure yet.
I don't remember, but I heard it this week. Senator Kirk told me they're working around the clock on it. So, but she didn't identify it. She didn't betray whoever it is.
I think it's delicate stuff.
At one time, there was a lot of talk about courses in social, emotional learning.
Yes.
Whatever happened to that? Is it something that's in public schools now?
Yes.
It is?
I mean, yeah. It's social emotional learning is providing the therapeutic supports the kids need to survive. The therapists in Tulsa, it's Family and Children's Services or Dayspring or Youth Services or even having a DHS person on staff to provide the things that you need to be ready to learn. That's social emotional learning. And understanding where are you coming from, because we've got very different backgrounds, and teachers being able to tailor learning based on the kid, based on the day. And teachers can do it. It sounds impossible, but I've seen it. And so when that piece of the culture war started happening, I was like, why would we have an issue with social emotional? This like gets kids to school. We need to do more of it. These are wraparound supports that tell kids it's a safe place to be here and you're going to get everything that you need. In Tulsa, in the Tulsa area, we're experiencing a growth in community schools. And community schools are sort of developed around that social emotional learning piece. And what that looks like, I'm in Union Public Schools, so they have a school that was designed by parents and kids and the community. To be everything that community needed. They picked the toughest part of their district and built a school with kids in mind, with teachers in mind. It has an on-site healthcare clinic that not just the kids, but the parents can use. And the school owned the land, sold it to a clinic for a dollar. So they would build there and invest. The kids got a part in designing it, and they have a slide from second floor to first floor, so things like that. But they also have a community garden in the back. They teach classes at night for parents. They have job skills training for the parents, all these different things that you need. But then they also reached out to the community, the churches, the restaurants, the Y, all of these different that are right in that area. Say, what can you provide? And every year they do things like, what is it that you want to do, fifth grader? What are you interested in learning this year? And they take surveys of their kids on their interests and design lesson plans around them for the next entire year. I mean, it's fast. You need to come see.
Well, and that
I was pretty impressed.
Well, and that's something that Joy Hoffmeister was really promoting as well. It's interesting. Well, we're at 7 o'clock. I know all the questions have not been answered, and there are myriad topics that we didn't get to cover in this hour. But, Melissa, thank you so much for coming over from Tulsa and on a hot day. It was an even hotter topic, I think, in here, but thank goodness the AC's working. So don't forget, come back the second Thursday in August, and we'll continue these conversations. And then think about Brews and Views the second Sunday. Come down to Norman, and I'm telling you what, the craft beer at Big Brewery is really good, and the conversation is even better. So we'll see you all then. Thanks.
And also, thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.